This is going to be a tremendous hour. Welcome back, or good afternoon, good morning, good evening, good wherever the hell you are. Great to have you here. Program brought to you by Rocket Mortgage, by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. I am Jim Rome. I'm taking a week off next week, so I'd love to hear from you right now. 1-800-636-8686. Coming up next segment, LA Clippers guard Landry Shamet. After that, Gonzaga head coach Mark Few. Bulldogs advance. They will be out here for the Sweet 16 on Thursday. So those two interviews are coming up this hour. Call me now if you missed hour number one. We recapped all the weekend action in the NCAA tournament. I started talking about Gronk. I was unable to finish my thoughts on his retirement. I'll get to that in a minute. I also want to talk about the Los Angeles Marathon. He did it. He did it. Hawk finished the marathon. He's at work right now, rocking his medal. Of course, Keith Arnold finished like several hours ahead of Hawk. That's getting lost in all this. But they both ran it. They both finished it. Two members of the XR4TI showing up and running the LA Marathon. I'm proud of both you boys. Really well done. So in terms of Gronk retiring, I want to finish my thoughts on that. I do want to add this. Bill Polian, who is not exactly the biggest Patriots fan. After all, the guy did work a decade and a half with the Colts, 8 years with the Bills. But Ben Volen tweeted this quote from Polian on Sirius XM NFL Radio. When asked about Gronk, Polian said, quote, "I think it's hard to argue anybody has ever played tight end as both a blocker and a receiver better than Gronk. And there have been damn few that ever ran after the catch like him." That's essentially where I come out. This is why I've never seen a tight end like Gronk. This is why I think Gronk is the best tight end ever. Nobody could do what he could do. Nobody was as complete as he was. And again, there are guys who had better numbers, but it's not like Gronk's numbers were bad. In fact, Gronk's numbers were awesome. Three Super Bowl rings, first tight end in history with three straight seasons of double-digit touchdowns. Most yards per game by a tight end in NFL history. Most receptions, receiving yards, and receiving TDs by a tight end in playoff history. Most receiving TDs by anybody since he entered the league. So great numbers, actually. And then, of course, the nickname, Gronk. The perfect nickname that summed this guy up in so many different ways. Gronk. It is such a great nickname. Like a big lug. A big clown who will absolutely clown you. Running around with those giant hamburger helper gloves. That huge brace. Running over guys. Running through guys. Running past guys. I mean, has there ever been a bigger physical mismatch on the field than this guy? Ever. Linebackers could not run with him. Safeties could not tackle him. And cornerbacks were like flies on a windshield. And the guy was an absolutely monster blocker. I mean, not like an overgrown receiver who didn't like to block. This guy was a road grader who also loved to get loose in secondaries. He wasn't an extra receiver or an extra blocker. He was an extra receiver and an extra blocker. Just ask the Rams, who paid the price on the most significant drive of the Super Bowl. The only reason the Patriots were able to score that one TD that they scored was because they ran Hoss wide juke three straight times and with three completely different but successful results. And the only reason why that play worked three straight times was because of Gronk. Because you never knew if he was going to be running a route or pancaking a defensive player, so you had to account for both. You had to prepare for both. And if you want to come in here and say that the Patriots are done, now that Gronk's done, you go right ahead. I'm not doing it. Now, don't get it twisted. I'm not saying that him retiring is not a big loss, because it is. Like, while he no longer beats double teams the way he used to, he still draws a hell of a lot of attention, which allows Tom Brady to work in other places. I could even argue that they don't win that ring last year without him. He made the biggest play of the game. He balled up when it mattered most. He was still pancaking fools. So, of course, it's a big loss. It's a big loss. But it doesn't mean that they're dead. It doesn't mean because he's done that they're done. Just because Gronk is done doesn't mean they're done. Keep falling for that trick every single time it comes around. Like I've said it before, I'll say it again right now. Apparently, I have to keep saying it. The Patriots are done when Tom Brady and Bill Belichick say they're done. There is no way to replace Gronk. But if any team can do it or get beyond it, it's the Pats. Unfortunately, they've had a lot of practice. Remember, this guy's not played a full season since his second year in the NFL. And yes, Tom Brady was a completely different quarterback with Gronk on the field. One goat feeds off another. And there isn't another piece out there that they can just plug into the Gronk spot. You know, Belichick can't do what he's done in the past. He can't take some DB and turn him around and make him a tight end. So ultimately, they may decide that if they can't replace him, they just have to go in a different direction altogether and change the entire offense. Now that they know he won't be coming back. I mean, Gronk is still young. And Drew Rosenhaus was actually making some noise about this. There is a possibility, however remote, that maybe he takes a year off and maybe he comes back. But if this is in fact it, then here was his final post-game conversation with Bill Belichick.
We're going to have fun tonight.
Yes, we are. And we deserve it.
Damn right.
We deserve it.
Damn right.
We haven't stepped out. I haven't stepped out in like 8 months. I got to step out tonight.
I'm with you, man.
Yes.
I'm even going to step out.
Oh, I like it.
That is so good. What a great exchange. You know what's more amazing than all Gronk's records? The fact that he got a high five from Bill Belichick and a commitment that Belichick was going to, quote, step out. You see, this is the other side of Gronk, because the highlights weren't just of him trucking fools. They were also of him acting the fool and being in on the act. Roll it.
What's up, Boston?
The catch. Goodbye, Gronk. Touchdown, Patriots.
Hey, what do you guys think of Roger Goodell?
He throws a lob down the right side for Gronkowski. Oh, yeah. Makes the catch at the 35. And Gronk is into the end zone. Touchdown, Patriots.
Why are you on the Gronk crew?
To sleep with Gronk.
That's going
to
be tough.
There's like way hotter chicks than me, but I'm hoping I'm a little bit more freaky than them.
Who's getting wild tonight?
It's a pump and go, and Gronk is open. A throw and a catch and a touchdown, Patriots.
That's what I'm talking about, baby.
Goes for Gronkowski. Catch is made. Touchdown, Patriots.
Set the big boy up with another one.
And there's only one thing you can deflate.
These nuts.
Shotgun snap. Throws down the right side for Gronk. Oh. Makes the catch to the 20. Gronk to the record book. Touchdown, 69 for Rob Gronkowski.
Go Source Fiesta.
The eye party for the fans.
I like to dance.
You like to dance?
Yeah.
Hit it.
You could have a superpower.
Boom. Is this time machine count?
Yeah, let's do it.
Boom, I'm in Florida.
Avoid the rush, throws on the go, finds Gronkowski, reaches down and makes a tumbling catch. A sensational grab at the 8-yard
line. Senor Roberto, will you spike the pinata?
Blue 42, blue 42, go, go, go.
Oh, oh.
No.
Part of that was Gronk on Jim Rome on Showtime. I'm so glad we had him. And that day, Gronk lived up to all the hype. Gronk showed up larger than life. He delivered. You know, like, on the one hand, you look at Gronk, and he is exactly how he appears. Yo soy fiesta. Yo on the other hand, you look at Gronk, and he's not what he appears. I mean, this dude is so much more cerebral and so much more instinctive and so well-prepared. And so gritty, man. So freaking tough. Such an amazing player. Such a complete player. So on the one hand, he looks like just that big clown. That big lug. But on the other hand, this dude is so good. So focused. Man, so disciplined. And the beating he took and just kept coming back. I'm going to miss Gronk. But the good thing is, Alvin, we'll always have that montage. The Gronk montage is so outstanding. I love that thing. I love it. I'll listen to part of that again. I kind of like that.
What's up, Boston?
What's your favorite part of this?
Play big five, Brady.
Who's cracking on the commissioner?
He makes the catch. Goodbye, Gronk. Touchdown, Patriots.
Hey, what do you guys think of Roger Goodell?
He throws
that part right there.
Oh, yeah. He makes the catch at the 35.
Oh, that drunk gal on the cruise.
He's into the end zone. Touchdown. Patriots.
Why are you on the Gronk crew?
To sleep with Gronk.
That's going to be tough.
There's like way hotter chicks than me, but I'm hoping I'm a little bit more freaky than them.
Who's getting wild tonight?
That's all right, Albie.
It's a pump and go.
Why are you on the cruise? To sleep with Gronk? Well, that's going to be pretty tough. There's a lot of competition out there. Yeah, I know. There's way hotter girls, but nobody's as drunk or as freaky as me. What does Gronk say? Yo estoy palabra?
Yo soy fiesta.
Yo soy fiesta. You're like, I'm going to say that I'm going to miss the big lug. We're going to still see him, clearly. Just not doing what he's done for the past decade or so. But we're going to see him. Gronk is going to be front and center. Gronk will be fine without football. Rome, Gronk will be gone but not forgotten. He'll be getting plenty of work with us. Regards, the WWE, Monday Night Football, Dancing with the Stars, Celebrity Big Brother, Pornhub, Tyler in Shredmonton. Like I said, gone but not forgotten, except not even gone. Rome, before you got in Hawk's car, did you have to toss a bunch of wrappers onto the floor? Steven PHX, were Rome making Hawk open the car door for him? I did not do that. And no, there weren't a bunch of wrappers. He did throw some stuff in the back seat, but he didn't expect the boss man to be riding shoddy with him. Seemed like the right thing to do. Like, I mean, to be fair, I wanted to go home, but Hawk worked a long, long day. We need to get our grub on, get our drink on. I knew it might be his last supper before Sunday. And yet he gets over. Got a free meal out of me, and he finished the marathon. When we come back, Landry Shamet, LA Clippers guard, joins me. And then we'll chase that by talking to Mark Few. So we go back-to-back this hour. Hour number three, we will break down the marathon. If you're waiting to hear from Hawk, wanting to know how that went, make sure you lock it in. We've got back-to-back interviews, and then top of hour number three, we get into the marathon. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. Busy Monday. Good Monday. We're going back-to-back right now. Coming up next segment, we'll talk to Gonzaga head basketball coach Mark Few. But as I mentioned, we're joined right now by a guard for the LA Clippers. He had 11 points, 2 assists, and 2 rebounds per game with Los Angeles since arriving. He is shooting 45.5% from 3 since arriving in LA. A 2-time all-conference player at Wichita State. The 26th pick in last year's draft. The Clippers are in second in the Pacific, and they're at Minnesota tomorrow night. We are joined by Landry Shamet. Landry, nice to have you on. How are you?
Hey, Jim. How's it going? Thanks for having me, man.
Good. Good to talk to you, bud. Thanks so much. You beat the Knicks in their place 124-113 yesterday, and that's the team's 5th straight win. So let me start right there. How much confidence is there in that locker room and around your team right now?
We feel good. We feel like we have a good group, and you know, since the trade, felt like you know we've been able to click pretty quickly with one another, get on the same page. And I think the biggest thing I noticed from coming in was just the culture was set from the top down, you know, from Doc to you know all the you know the front office to win and wants to you know exceed expectations that we have. And, I think we all play with the same chip and just want you know kind of push the team as far as we can.
We're talking to Landry Shamet. Landry, I've got kind of a tough connection with you right now. Let me ask you one more question, and we'll see if it's all right. Otherwise, I might pick you up. I know you picked up a bit of an ankle injury yesterday, but if you look at the larger picture, this was a team that was battling for a playoff spot just over a month ago, and now you're 5th in the West, and you're battling for the home court in the first round. So what's it been like for you since joining the team in that trade that involved Philadelphia?
Yeah, I mean, it's a different aspect here. You know, you're like I said, kind of, you know, feel like we're trying to overachieve and do more than, you know, what anybody put expectations on us. But, you know, to be in the situation that we're in with fifth, we're definitely not satisfied because we know how, you know, crazy and volatile the Western Conference is. But, you know, there's 9 more games left this season, and that's hopefully 9 more wins we see, you know, coming our way. And that's how we want to approach it and put ourselves in the best situation possible, playoff time.
Landry Shamet joining us, Clippers guard. You know, you made the point, you brought up Doc a moment ago, but you've also made the point that he empowers you to push it anytime you get a rebound. He's not looking for you to look to somebody else. He wants you to get out and run. What's it mean to you that your head coach has got that confidence in you and he's empowered you to do that?
Yeah, everybody in our locker room, he talks about it all the time. He says he wants us to play free and play the right way. I think that's the best way that, you know, for a team like us to play. So we have a lot of guys that are talented and doing what they do. And I think when we all play free and don't feel like we're under a, you know, kind of a blanket of what we can and can't do, I think we play well with one another. We all believe in one another and empower each other to, you know, do what we do. And we have a very unselfish group, and, you know, we all just kind of want what's best for us all. So it works out well. And especially having Doc at the head of it all, kind of empowering us to, you know, be ourselves and do what we do.
Now, you were drafted by Philadelphia. You had a really nice thing going on there, but then you were part of that trade to L.A. Hey, look, it's a business. Everybody loves to say it's a business. It's easier to say it's a business when it doesn't involve you, but when it does involve you and you find out you've been traded, what goes through your mind? How'd you process that?
Yeah, the first thing was just like, what now? You know, it's like, being totally honest, I had no inclination that, you know, I would be traded. I'm thinking I'm the only rookie on this team, and you know, and I'm, you know, I'm going to be here for a while. And then, you know, you get a phone call from your agent at 2 a.m. and you know exactly what it is. And it's just, I mean, a lot of things are going through your mind at the time. As you go through the whole spectrum of emotions, you're mad at first and angry. And then, you know, you talk to, get off the phone with Doc and, you know, Lawrence Frank, and then you're feeling motivated and ready to go play for your new team. And then come down from that, you're confused, and, you know, it's, you feel a ton of emotions in a very short period of time. But I think the best thing for me was once I got to basketball, once I got to meet my teammates, and we had a practice in Boston the night before we played Boston. I think at that point was when, you know, I started to feel a little more normal when it just got back to basketball. And then, you know, I was able to treat it back as, like, you know, a business, like you mentioned.
Landry, I really appreciate that response, man. That's a really honest response, and I do appreciate that.
Yeah.
You know, it seems to me there are two ways you can react, right? You might go into the tank, or you might seize the opportunity and thrive.
Right.
You've done the second, and you did it quickly. You scored 17, including 13 in the fourth quarter, and you led that 28-point comeback in Boston in your first game with the Clippers. So what was that game like for you?
Man, that game was crazy. It was a lot of fun. I hadn't beat Boston yet. You know, that's obviously a place where you want to go and win, a kind of a historic venue and a lot of history and just a place everybody wants to play. And I hadn't won or beat them yet. So, you know, we went in there and we were getting throttled. First half is like a 30-point deficit almost. And I learned a lot about our group really quickly. We came in the locker room and nobody acted like the game was over at halftime. Nobody acted like, you know, we were out of it. We talked about what we needed to do better, what we needed to change, and we came out and did that. Just played hard, and you know, found a way to, you know, walk them down, chop wood, and we ended up, you know, being able to win the game. And it was just a lot of fun to be a part of, you know, kind of, you know, that comeback. So it was just fun to be on the floor with my teammates and playing with them, and it was awesome.
Landry Shamet joining me. I'm watching the Clippers this year, and I'm telling you, they seem like a team. You guys seem like a team that. You're never going to back down. You battle every single night. Now, you are hitting 42% from three this year, but even better since you arrived with the Clippers. For people who watch you play at Wichita State, there might be a feeling that you're a different player now than you were there. Is that accurate? I mean, how much has your game changed since this time last year?
Yeah, my role is completely different, you know, right now relative to last year. Last year, Wichita State, for anybody that don't watch me, I was a point guard. I was on the ball, you know, every possession, you know, kind of facilitating our offense. And anytime I scored, it was through, you know, ball screens and playing with the ball and transition and that sort of thing. And now, you know, I'm playing like strictly, you know, off the ball, two guard, running off screens and, you know, being able to play without the ball. I love my role now. I'd be lying if I said I didn't miss a little bit of the point guard stuff, but it's not anything that, not like I'm saying I don't like my role now. I love my role, love my teammates, and love, you know, what I'm able to do and how I'm able to contribute. But it's a very, very different role. People probably might not recognize me from, you know, last year to this year.
You know, something that hasn't changed, and it's one of the things you've talked about and knowing you as a basketball player, you told Slam Magazine earlier this year, I thought this was really interesting, quote, you don't have to be the most athletic or make the big-time highlight plays. You don't have to do that to have a successful basketball career. Knowing how to play, knowing how to be effective in doing what you do, end of quote. To me, that's a really wise statement for somebody so young. Where did you learn that approach?
I was lucky to play for, you know, a really good AAU program and a good AAU coach who, you know, it used to be annoying, but we would play, you know, like, you know, 3-on-3, no dribble and stuff in practice, not be able to dribble the ball a couple times, like for, you know, like half the practice, 5-on-5, no dribble. And so you got to learn how to, you know, play and move and be able to score and cut and read screens and, you know, that whole thing that, you know, kind of goes untaught today. You know, a lot of kids want to play with the ball, play on the ball, and then, you know, they get to college and that's all you know, and you're kind of dug yourself a little bit of a hole. So, I was just lucky to have good people around me and to be able to teach me and put that mindset into play.
Hey, listen, you're a really humble guy. And the last time you and I spoke, we talked about the fact that you've been overlooked in the past. Now you're getting a ton of love, a ton of respect. Is there, despite that humility, is there any party that feels like saying, it's about time? It's about time.
Jim, it's funny, man. I don't think I'm ever going to lose that feeling of being, you know, overlooked. I don't, there's no sense of satisfaction whatsoever. Like, it is cool. It's good. And, you know, I guess, you know, being on your show and, you know, being able to get asked the questions and all that. But I don't think that's a chip I'm always going to have, man. It's just, that's who I am. That's what's got me here, regardless if I'm seen globally as the best player or whatever. It's not going to be, nothing's going to change. So it's just who I am and, you know, how I'm going to continue to carry myself.
I like it. You'll always be welcome on this show. I'll always ask you the questions on this show. Landry, before you go, let me ask you about Lou Williams. He had 29 yesterday's win, man. Lou, he's something else. Like, it doesn't matter what time the game starts, where that game is played. My man just scores. As one pro looking at another, what do you make of Lou and his game?
Man, it's frustrating because it's so easy. It just looks so easy. You know, he just walks into the lane and shoots layups. And it's just so easy. Even on a bad night the other night, I wouldn't even consider that a good night for him. He still finds a way to go get 30 and lead us to a win. He's something special. Nothing like I've seen before. Just how easy and fluid it is for him to score the ball. So he's obviously a huge part of our team. I don't see how he doesn't win Sixth Man of the Year. I think he's more than deserving. And if you look at what all he has to do for us every night to help us win, you know. But he's incredible.
Clippers are in second in the Pacific, and they're battling for that home court. They're at Minnesota tomorrow. Landry Shamet's been a tremendous addition to them and playing great ball since coming over. My man, so good to have you back on, Landry. Appreciate you. Thanks for doing it. Hope we can talk again soon.
Yeah, Jim, thank you.
Appreciate you, man. Sincerely. Landry Shamet, we had talked to him at Wichita State, and Philadelphia drafted him. And again, I thought that was a really honest response. In fact, the whole interview was really honest. Good stuff. And you got to respect the Clippers. They are having, I think Doc Rivers has done as good a job this year as he's ever done. And that's a team that was not expected to do much. And then they're not only in the hunt, they're in a battle for home court in the first round. And they grind. They play hard every single night. Speaking of playing hard, when we come back, Gonzaga head coach Mark Few joins us. We go back to back. So we're talking Bulldog basketball next. And the Sweet 16, Gonzaga coming out to Southern California. They'll be at the Honda Center on Thursday. Top of the hour, we recap the Los Angeles Marathon. Hawks, stay in the fight. Stay in the fight. Don't die on me now. You're going to get your moment of glory at the top of the hour. Mark Few comes first.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Get caught up on all the March Madness action with Encores on CBS Sports Network. Tonight, starting at 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific, it's 2019 Tournament Rebound on the 24-hour home of CBS Sports. Look for it. We are efforting Mark Few. I will turn that around for you shortly. Let me reset you really quickly. You have your telephone number, 1-800-636-8686. We also have a top-of-the-hour recap of Adam Hawk running the L.A. Marathon. That's top of the hour, but right now we are joined by the head basketball coach of Gonzaga, the recipient of numerous National Coach of the Year awards, a 13-time WCC Coach of the Year. He leads the Zags to their fifth straight Sweet 16, the only program in the country to make it to the last five Sweet 16s. Gonzaga taking on Florida State Thursday night, 7:09 p.m. Eastern. Out here in Southern California, we are joined by Gonzaga head coach Mark Few. Mark, good to have you back. How are you, Mark?
Hey, I'm doing well, Jim. Awesome to be back on with you.
Awesome to have you back on. Another run of the Sweet 16. Mark, let me ask you about the win over Baylor on Saturday, 83-71. Brandon Clark had 36. He was 15 of 18 shooting. He had five blocks. As you know, he joined Shaq O'Neal and David Robinson as the only players in tournament history with 35 points and five blocks in a game. I know you've seen some special performances in your career. How special was this one?
Oh, my goodness. Probably at the very top. Just when you combine how big the moment was and how much we needed every one of those plays, as Baylor made some very spirited runs at us in the second half, and just the level of athleticism and just how spectacular some of them were. Like, Jim, as I watched them during the game, I remember going, okay, that's kind of BC. And then on the plane ride home, I'm watching the tape, and I'm like, holy smokes, I can't believe he, you know, he tip slammed in a tip slam. Killian missed an alley-oop slam, and then Brandon came and followed it with a tip slam. I don't think I've ever seen that in 30 years of coaching.
Mark Few joining us. And the thing is, Mark, it wasn't just Clark. As you've pointed out, Corey Kispert had a monster game as well on both ends. What did you make of his impact on the game?
Well, it's funny. I said after the game, and I still mean this, Brandon Clark was absolutely just off the charts, magnificent, spectacular, any superlative you want to use. But for us, Corey Kispert was the player of the game because, you know, Brandon's been able to do that numerous times for us this year, maybe not quite to that high a level. But for Kispert, we put him on Mark Vidal, Baylor's big guy, we kind of cross-matched, and for him to get in there, rebound the ball the way he did, poke balls away, and then knock down those threes was huge.
We're talking to Mark Few. You know, Mark, I'm thinking about this. Watching Baylor, they throw some really unusual looks at you defensively,
yeah. And
they can be tough to prep for, especially as the second game of a weekend. So what's it say about the comfort and the feel for the game that your guys have that they're able to do what they did on such a short turnaround?
Well, that's a great call by you. They are really difficult. They play. We had prepped for the Syracuse zone a lot during the week. You know, again, not taking anything for granted in that 116 game. That's a scary, scary proposition as a coach, that darn 116 game. But also knowing that, you know, it's a two-game tournament over the weekend, and we prepped hard for Syracuse, but also for Baylor zone, because it's really a unique zone with a lot of length and pressed up on you out on the perimeter. And Scott Drew, I said this going into the game, I think he's a vastly underrated coach nationally, just schematically and you know how he gets his teams to play year in and year out. And it's a tough turnaround, but you nailed it. I mean, I got a very mature team. I got a team that's seen a lot, that has experienced a lot. If you have, from our point guard Josh Perkins, you know, back down our roster to Norvell and Tilly and you know, even Rui has really kind of blossomed into a guy that has garnered a lot of experience in big-time games.
We're talking to Mark Few. You know, it's the second part of that question, Mark. From a coaching standpoint, I wonder, how much of your job as a head coach is about what happens between that first-round game and the second-round game, or between the second-round game and the Sweet 16, or is the success that you have in these situations the results of habits that you established back in the preseason?
Well, it's a combination of both. I mean, unless you, at this time of year, you got to really rely on you know, the foundation that you've built going all the way back to September. But then, you know, you've also got to just schematically get your guys ready for things like, we haven't seen a zone like Baylor's all year. Nobody plays like that. So you got to make some adjustments. And we put in some different sets both the day before and the day of the game, which I've been blessed at Gonzaga to have guys and teams that can handle that, that can then go out and execute it with just short prep.
We're talking to Mark Few. Mark, listen, you got a bullseye on your back, and you know this, that, I mean, you're a power program. I don't want to put more pressure on you, but you've always been really good about referencing and bringing up the Rome Christmas card every single year. Just know the entire Rome family is going to bust out to come to the game on Thursday to watch you do work.
My goodness.
But I don't want to put more pressure on you.
No. I'm good with that. I'm good, but that is awesome. It'll be great to have that support. And man, Florida State is loaded, as I'm sure you know. Essentially the same team that knocked us out last year. So they're long, crazy athletic, really, really deep. And I mean, on Selection Sunday, I honestly thought they'd be up on that two line, and to see them on the four line was, you know, kind of a surprise / shock. But you know, you got to beat good teams. You really got to beat good teams once you get to this part of the tournament. And we're going to have to play great to advance.
You know, you just ripped two of my questions. I was going to say, what was your thought when you saw them in the draw? And they don't look like a four. They don't look like a four at all. They look like they're closer to a two. So how do you go about approaching the next few days in terms of getting the right balance of prep and rest and then traveling to Orange County? What's the approach?
Well, another great take by you. Last year at this time, we were prepping for Florida State, and Killian Tilly got hurt in the last little half-speed drill we did before we got on the plane. So that is definitely in the back of my mind. You know, that you got to factor that in, too. As a coach, you get a little too hung up in, you know, prep and reps and doing everything you can, but the health of your team being at full potential is probably the most important thing, and rested and fresh and ready. So, you know, having the experience of going against them last year, our guys, you know, kind of know what they're up against, just their length, just how hard it is to score around the basket against them, and their versatility. They switch a lot. They play. I mean, Jim, I've never seen a team plays so many guys and Coach Hamilton be so comfortable with playing so many guys, and they just keep more guys coming in. It's almost like a hockey exchange. And they all have just a little, you know, different thing they bring to the game. But probably the biggest thing they bring to the game is just the length and athleticism. And it's really hard to score on them. And then the last game, what was thought to be one of their weaknesses was perimeter shooting, and they banged in like 15 threes. So it's a big week here. We got some time to prep for them, and we're a better offensive team than we were last year, and we're going to have to come out and show that. And we're going to have to obviously, you know, play our tails off on the defensive end too, the way they're making shots now.
I like that hockey analogy. It is true. It's like they're rolling lines, like they've got line after line after line. They just keep coming at you. Mark, before you go,
I don't understand the hockey substitution. Is it just a free-for-all? Can you run in anytime you want, or how does that work?
Well, not exactly a free-for-all. I mean, there is some rhyme and reason. There's a science to it. But, yeah, you can just keep rolling guys in. They get their shifts. They go back, and they keep coming. Yeah. But your point is they've got depth, and they've got fresh bodies. Listen, before you go, this is great, I think. I want to go off the board. You made it very clear on Selection Sunday that there was no way that John Calipari could survive in the Alaskan wilderness. He hopped on Twitter after that and tweeted in part, quote, "Everyone was killing me last night saying I couldn't last in Alaska, said I wouldn't last 10 minutes. I could live off the grid easily, chopping wood, fishing, hunting squirrels and moose now and then, scaring bears, pooping in the woods. Come on, Alaska." Mark, I know you've got a lot of respect for Cal and his program, but is he fooling himself with that?
Okay, now he's my guy, and he's a very good friend of mine, and we talk, you know, a lot, you know, probably once a week or so. Again, I will reiterate, because I go up there and I fish a lot, Jim. I think you know that. A couple times a year I'm up there, and Alaska's a spectacular place. But, you know, you're on your own, at least in the trips I go on. He has zero, zero chance of handling, you know, days out there fishing and recreating on his own. Now, he could go up there to a five-star lodge or whatever and eat some caviar and spend some time on the deck with a mosquito net around his face for a while, but he has zero chance of going out and living off the grid. I can tell you that. He couldn't live off the grid in his backyard in Kentucky.
That's the best. His own family members, Mark, took to Twitter to say that he couldn't hang, he couldn't last. You tell me, what does it take to survive out there? What's it like out there?
Oh, I mean, first of all, it's awesome. I mean, it's an incredible place. I recommend it for any family, even with you with the boys to go up there. I take my boys up there, at least once a year, and the fishing is spectacular. But I mean, hey, it's not many days up there. It's not a very pleasant place. The bugs are all over you. The wind is howling, the rain's coming down sideways, and you know, there's no Starbucks right around the corner. You know, you're just kind of on your own, and you got to figure it out.
Mark Few, head basketball coach at Gonzaga, and as I mentioned, the only program to go to the Sweet 16 five straight years. Another great challenge. They've got Florida State coming up Thursday here in Southern California. Mark, have a great week. I'm not going to bother you, but the Rome family will be there to see you, and I'm looking forward to it. And it's great to have you on. Thanks for doing that today.
I always enjoy it, and now that I know you're coming, I hope we play great because we're going to have to. We want to move on.
I know you guys will.
Thanks for having me on, though.
Great to have you back, Mark. Thanks so much. Appreciate you and the relationship and you coming on before a big game like that. Mark Few on the program. Good jungle friend. He goes way back. Coach Ham comes on the program. That's a good matchup. That's a rematch right there. But as he points out, they're a different team offensively now than they were last year. I love that game. So that's coming up on Thursday. A couple of really good games at the Honda Center. All right, so we are open the rest of the way. 1-800-636-8686. Let me set up that third hour for you. A definite marathon recap at the top of the hour. We'll have our end of the hour break, and then at the top of the hour, I'm going to give you my thoughts on Adam Hawk and Keith Arnold, both entering and finishing the LA Marathon. I'm going to focus on Hawk, though, because there was so much talk going into it. Remember, it was Hawk who took this thing on, forgot that he was having a kid, fell behind in his training, decided that he was over the whole thing, but was not going to quit, was not going to pull out. So instead, he just stopped training, stopped working, stopped training, was eating crap, and said, you know what, I'm just going to show up day of and wing it. And there were a number of people who know, runners who were saying, Hawk, I mean, that's like a suicide mission. That is such a bad idea. And yet there were others who were saying, you know what, you can do this. You can do it. It's possible. In fact, come to find out, Hawk, I don't know if you're going to give this up or not. A guru. He had a guru. There was a guy that knows, a world-renowned Ironman athlete, triathlete. And he got to Hawk and said, hey, listen, man, you can do this. You can do this. Don't let the haters get inside your head. This is how you do this. You can do this. I can help you get through this. And sure enough, Hawk got through it. When we come back, we'll hit it. The marathon recap. He finished the LA Marathon and is here with a medal around his neck. I want to get into the Bob Kraft apology, or that non-apology. All of that coming up next hour. Phone lines are open. 1-800-636-8686. I said to Mark Few, what's it like being in Alaska? And by the way, how do you not love Mark Few? God, what a great coach. Talk a little Alaska. We've got an affiliate in Anchorage, no less. Stay tuned.